Welcome to hour number three, live in Southern California. I am Jim Rome. Welcome to the program. It is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, this can be a very good hour. Telephone number is toll-free. It's wide open. It's good in the U.S. It's good in Canada. You know where to find me, 1-800-636-8686. Got a great, great guest coming up in about 10 seconds. In the meantime, if you want to hit me up on Twitter, do that. Follow me at Jim Rome, and you know where to find me on email. Speaking of that guest, we are joined right now by a member of the U.S. Olympic team, a four-time national champion at Notre Dame, an All-American, footlocker, cross-country champion in both high school and in college. She finished second at the Olympic marathon trial in her very first marathon. Molly Seidel is my guest. Molly, it's so nice to have you on. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Super to have you. So normally we'd be talking about the Olympics right now, but and what you accomplished in Atlanta and your preparations for Tokyo, but given that it's been postponed for a year, you did support USA Track and Field's call to postpone the Games. But at the same time, how challenging is it to know that you have to wait another year, and how are you approaching that?
Yeah, it's definitely disappointing with the postponement, but I think in the end, this is 100% the right call for the IOC and our track governing body here in the U.S., USATF. It's just really not, I don't think it's reasonable to expect people to be going out in 4 months and competing at the Olympic Games when we're still really in the thick of it with coronavirus worldwide. So it's presenting a new set of challenges with training, but I'm trying to look at it as an opportunity. I get a full extra year now to try and get a little bit better at the marathon distance, because kind of like you said, I've only done one at this point. So it might be a cool opportunity for me to try and race another one, maybe like a New York or a Chicago or Boston marathon in the fall, and then just see where we are by next summer when we finally get to do the game.
You can follow her at By Golly Molly 12 on Twitter, which I love. Molly Seidel is joining us. Now, you made the point that you were able to do your training and you're qualifying at a time before coronavirus could impact you. Could you imagine training and preparing for the trials or the Olympics themselves at this point? I mean, how impossible would that be?
Well, that's the challenging thing. Before the games were officially postponed, many of my friends and other fellow pro runners here in Boston, where I live and train, were trying to do just that, because the games were still set to go this summer. They were worrying that they weren't going to be able to do the Olympic trials or to train. Basically, every competition had been canceled, and they were putting their own safety basically on the line, just trying to go out and train every day. Every track has been closed. Every gym has been closed. I just don't really see how it would have been possible for them to stay healthy while trying to train for something of this magnitude. So I'm very glad for the postponement for their sake. So mostly right now we're all kind of just in a holding pattern, trying to do our runs but not really train for anything specific and just get through the worst of this.
Molly Seidel is my guest. Now, you've got an amazing story, and I want to get into it in a moment so people truly understand what you've accomplished, because you've been working at a coffee shop. There's this angle that you're a barista who qualified for the Olympics the first time she entered a marathon. I mean, it's pretty funny, but it's not the whole story. So if we were to go all the way back, how did you first get into running, and what was it about the sport that you liked so much?
Yeah, I first got into it actually through my church growing up. We didn't have a track team at my school. I went to a very, very small school, so my CCD was letting kids train with their track team. And so I hopped in, found that I was pretty good at it, and then kind of just continued from there, went through into high school and ended up winning a few state titles and eventually the national championship my senior year, and got a scholarship through college. So I think the media kind of jumped on this idea of, oh, yeah, this plucky barista who never ran before just, like, qualified for the Olympics. But
incredible.
The story's a little bit more complicated than that.
Amazing.
I am a professional runner, but I work a side hustle just to kind of make ends meet, because running isn't exactly the most lucrative of sports.
It is really a funny story that you just kind of jumped out there and, hey, I think I'll try this little marathon thing. But the fact is, you're kind of underselling this. You had an amazing high school career in Wisconsin, which included winning all four 1,600 and 3,200 runs in track and field. You set state records in both. You won four cross-country titles. You won the Foot Locker cross-country championships in 2011. So how would you describe your experience running in high school?
Yeah, I would say running in high school, it was Wisconsin isn't a huge state, so I don't want to say too much that it was like a big fish, small pond, but definitely like going from high school to college was definitely that next step up. It was a lot higher of competition, I think. In high school, I got kind of used to being able to go out and easily win races, and then when you move up to that next level, it's definitely a lot harder when you're now against all the best runners in the country who are all the best in their states. So, yeah, I think each time I've gone up a level, there's kind of an adjustment period of like, okay, get used to this next level, learn how to do this and respond.
Molly Seidel is my guest. So you go to Notre Dame and you arrive with a lot of hype. And as you mentioned, there's a whole different level and a whole different challenge in running in college. A lot of it's great, but there's some really harmful and some unhealthy body image issues that could come along with that. If, Molly, you're comfortable talking about that, can you discuss what that experience was like for you?
Yeah. I think the sport of running is one that kind of has a little bit of a dark side in that definitely perpetuates this idea that to be faster, you need to be skinnier or smaller, and that the people who succeed in the sport are those who can keep their body weight the lowest. And that leads to a lot of disordered eating. And for me, it really did kind of highlight some of these underlying problems that I've had with OCD and anxiety throughout my life, accentuated that. And it did kind of manifest itself as an eating disorder. I won my national championships, but right after that was sidelined with repeated injury. My weight had dropped about 20 pounds over the course of about a year or so when I was winning these national championships. And it eventually got to the point where I had to seek medical treatment for eating disorder recovery. And it's something that I've dealt with now off and on for the last several years, and something that I still have to pay a lot of attention to. But I'm hoping that my story and the fact that I faced this, overcame it, and now I'm back running at a high level can help other women who are going through it, who may be in college right now, suffering from this, believing that they have to be the absolute lowest body weight to succeed. And I hope that I can show them, like, no, I'm actually running faster now that I'm a higher body weight than I was in college, but I'm stronger and I'm healthier, and that's what's letting me succeed.
You know, I so appreciate you sharing that, and there's no telling how many people have been helped by your willingness to share that. You know, the story goes that you competed at the 2016 Olympic trials because you were dealing with a stress fracture. At that point, a teammate from Notre Dame told you that you did not look well. What do you remember about that?
Yeah, that was really kind of my rock bottom moment. It wasn't even that I didn't look well. It was she basically told me that I looked like I was dying. And at that point, I was 95 pounds, like 20 pounds down from my normal weight. And my bones were repeatedly breaking. And that was the wake-up call that I kind of needed. I'd been in a little bit of denial leading up to that point. And her being able to say that from someone that I really trusted and like from one of my best friends was kind of the impetus for me to finally go and get help. And I'm not going to lie, like eating disorder treatment was pretty much the hardest thing I've ever gone through, but I'm glad that I did. And I'm glad that I had people around me who cared about me as a person rather than as a runner and wanted me to be healthy and have a good life, regardless of whether or not it affected my running.
Molly Seidel is my guest. And one more thought about that, because the story goes you left sponsorship money on the table so you can make that decision and take care of yourself. I think a lot of people in your position might have tried to push on through, ignored everything, and just taken that money. Why didn't you?
I think I had a really good support network around me. I had, kind of like I said before, people who were looking out for me more as a person rather than as a runner. And like my parents really couldn't care whether or not I'm running. They want me to be healthy at the end of the day, and they want me to be happy. And so being able to have people like that in my life who are able to let me see, like, okay, if you don't get fully mentally and physically healthy now, it's going to affect you the rest of your life, and you probably won't be running a year or two from now if you don't solve this right now. So I'm glad that I had those people around me. But yeah, it was one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make. And truthfully, at the time, I felt like I was giving up on my pro running career. It's hard when you're it feels like you're sitting at the bottom of a well and looking up and wondering how you're going to get out of it. And it just seems impossible. And it's kind of just one step at a time.
One step at a time, one day at a time. You did all the hard work, and then you came back, and then in December, you qualified for the Olympic trials with a really strong showing at the Rock and Roll Half Marathon in San Antonio, including getting a cool fist bump from a young girl at mile 11. What was the plan going into that race, both for the race and the upcoming few months, and then how did that change based on the result?
Yeah, truthfully, going into those races, I had a very open mind about it. I had never done the half marathon. I really didn't know what to expect. And so when I went and did well at the San Antonio half, going into it, my coach and I hadn't really even planned on doing the Olympic trials. I was set to debut at a different marathon, actually. And we kind of talked it over, thought it would be a really cool experience to go for the Olympic trials. Just because I'm so young, we didn't really anticipate that I would be very competitive. Usually women are more competitive in their late 20s or early 30s at the marathon. So going into it, and then with the half in Houston, when I ran a better time than I did in San Antonio, kind of this slow build of like, okay, like maybe I can do this. Maybe like training is going well, like kind of raising the expectation each time. But even the day before the race, my coach, when we were sitting down, was like, okay, worst case scenario, you get probably 15th tomorrow. Best case scenario, you maybe get third. So it was definitely out of the blue to find myself in second place going into mile 20. And like, okay, now you really like are in it and you've got to commit to this.
Talking to Molly Seidel, then as you mentioned, you did run faster at the Houston half in January. You ran with Molly Huddle. And then you had an Instagram post the other day that read, before the Houston half back in January, I was worried my training was not enough, that I couldn't work out as hard as veteran marathoners did. A really smart friend sitting next to me on the bus started to say something. Who was that friend and what did that friend tell you?
So the friend sitting next to me on the bus over to the start line in Houston was Alphine Tillamook, who is the winner of the women's Olympic trials. And she's definitely she's a close friend of mine, someone I look up to enormously. And she's been through her own share of struggles. She had been through a severe stress fracture in her sacrum and come back from that. And basically, she told me, like, your training isn't going to be like anyone else's because you're not like anyone else. Like, you can't keep comparing yourself to all these women. You need to just focus on what you can do. And that meant a lot coming from her, who's someone that I see as an enormously successful runner. And so being able to have her there with me for those final 6 miles in the marathon trials, not only the advice that she had given me in the past, but then that support that she gave me over those final 6 miles when we weren't racing, we were working together to get to the finish line and to make that team together. It was really special.
I was going to say, Molly, so what was that like? So when you're working with her for the last 6 miles and given all the work and everything you had to come back from to finish the trials, to hit the finish line, she's waiting for you there. You know you're headed to the Olympics. What was that moment like?
It was just this sense of like, it's been my dream since I was a little kid to make an Olympic team. And it's I think every runner's ultimate dream to be able to wear the USA singlet in the Olympics. And so crossing that line, it's just this enormous sense of like relief and accomplishment. One, relief because you don't have to run anymore. You finally get to rest, but also just like, wow, like I can't believe that actually happened. And just this like washing over of like happiness. Like Alfian's there, who's been working with me so hard over the last 26.2 miles. My family is there waiting for me. My coach is there, and he's been like just through it with me. And it meant so much because like all of these people who had meant so much to me and helped me get to that point were all there to celebrate it with me. It was a really, really fun, special moment.
Yeah, beautiful. Let me ask you this before you go. So like at the end of the marathon, your first marathon, what was more challenging? Was it managing, I would imagine, the inevitable physical pain or maybe the emotion of the moment in the end?
Yeah, I think it's probably both because so, like obviously when you're getting to mile 20 of a marathon, you're so tired and you still have 10 kilometers to go, you still have a lot of racing left and your legs don't want to move, but you know you have to keep pushing. And then also realizing, oh my gosh, I'm in second place. And trying to not psych myself out at that point, not to think too much and not to think of all of the women who are very fast that I'm ahead of and thinking like, oh my gosh, Desiree Linden, who is the Boston Marathon winner, three-time Olympian, is right behind me. Sally Kipiego, who's a world silver medalist, is right behind me, and not freaking out and being able to say, okay, I'm just going to focus on what I need to do right now and to just stay with Alphine and just run my race right now. If they catch me, they catch me. It's fine. Just go with it. And so, yeah, trying to manage both the mental stress and the just physical pain you're going through. It's a balancing act.
Oh, amazing. All right, so finally, you posted on Instagram, quote, "I've waited my whole life for this moment to make the Olympics safer for everyone. I'm willing to wait a bit longer." So how do you go about approaching the next year in preparation for the Olympics?
Yeah, so right now we're just kind of trying to get through this very difficult time. I'm in Boston right now, and obviously we're kind of under a lockdown. So it's just going day to day and not trying to plan too far in the future. Hopefully if things open up by the fall and there are races being held, we'll start to put together a race schedule, some distances between the 10K and the marathon, and then hopefully culminate with a bigger marathon later in the fall. And then we'll see as we go into next spring. It's a world cross country championship year that's in Australia. So we'll potentially think about trying to qualify for that team. And then, yeah, just really gearing up for a long marathon build leading into Tokyo. So it'll be preparation and require a lot of flexibility with the current state of the world. But yeah, I think I'm pretty good with dealing with unknown. So we'll just try and ride it out.
She is a member of the U.S. Olympic team. She was a four-time national champion at Notre Dame and All-American as well, and did finish second at the Olympic marathon trial in her very first marathon. Molly, so nice to meet you. What a great conversation and what a great story. I'm so glad that you shared it with us and our listeners, and really nice to have you on the program, Molly. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
That was fun. Molly Seidel. Great story, great message, and I applaud her courage in sharing her story, and there's no telling how many people she helped by sharing what she's gone through and the way she came out the other end. And in her very first marathon, second in the trials, and she qualifies for the Olympics. All right, hope you enjoyed that. Hope you got something out of that. That was great. All right, we will take a short timeout. We're open the rest of the way. I've got more to get to, including the COVID-19 roundup. Some weird things going on. The Post Malone beer pong tourney. Have you seen that? And some more hard sports. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Also, open phones when we return.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Dell Small Business Technology Advisors are ready to help with advice, dedicated one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions like computers with Intel Core processors, server storage, and more. To speak with an advisor today, call 877-BY-DELL, 877-BY-DELL. You know, I'm kind of struck. I'm always struck by a conversation like that. That's a great conversation. I could not be more impressed with Molly Seidel. I can't be more impressed with what she's done athletically, what she's done personally, the way she showed up on this show. Like, I've never spoken to her before, and you can tell right from the very jump, she was extremely poised, extremely composed, very confident. She wanted to share her story. She knew she had a pretty good platform. She knew that others might benefit from it. I mean, there was so much to like about that conversation. I couldn't have liked that or respected that anymore. Now, I never, ever want to confuse those participating with the entire audience, because we know that's not the case, right? We know the few that are really active on Twitter and social do not represent the entire audience. I know there's a giant portion of this audience that never interacts on any level, would never pick up the phone and call, would never thumb out a tweet. And I'm not here to crack those that do participate on social. I love that. I really do. I just want to make one point. A lot of you, not all of you, but a lot of you that do participate on social, while I love the interaction, while I appreciate the interaction, do not twist this up. I do. That said, a lot of you are looking for the joke constantly, always, no matter what we do. So a lot of you are quick to turn that interview into some kind of hawk beatdown or hawk crackback. And it makes me think to myself, I start to think this, and I check myself. Did you even hear any of the interview? She had disordered eating. She thought she might lose her life. She had to stop running. and she did all the hard work. She had this amazing support group around her. She built herself back up emotionally. There was an inherent message in that also, the dark side of running, long distance running, the sport itself, that people don't want to talk about, that they don't necessarily see. She experienced it firsthand. It could have led not only to the end of her career, but maybe something even worse. But she stared it down, and she did the hard work, and she came back, and she built herself up emotionally and physically and had the support of everybody around her. And it's such a powerful message. And then she runs her first marathon on the trials, comes in second, qualifies for the Olympics. I mean, that's a powerful message. A really impressive athlete. And yet I'm looking at this, it's like, hey, yeah, you know what I got out of that? I got out of that that Hawk is fat and slow. That's what you got from that. But then I remember who some of you dopes are, and you're going to do what you do no matter what. So I want to make the point. I want to be really sure to point out I could not have been more impressed with Molly Seidel. I was really eager to talk to her, and that was even better than I thought. So props to her, and props to us for having her on, and props to Molly most of all for coming on. My favorite part of the story, aside from everything she went through and the message that's inherent, is the fact that she works at a coffee shop, and people are trying to make this out to be like, hey, yeah, yeah, you see that little barista over there who ran her first marathon and qualified for the Olympics? Incredible! Yeah, that's not what that was. She was a super, superstar in high school and went on and had a great college career. She's not a barista that went online and said, let's see the train. How do I train for a marathon? She didn't go all Hawk with it. You imagine running a marathon for the very first time in the trials and looking over there like, oh, there's a three-time winner of the Boston Marathon behind me trying to run me down. Amazing. Hawk, I'd ask for your opinion on this, but I don't need it nor want it. I've never seen Hawk so geeked up. He was like reaching for the phone. Molly, it's Adam Hawk. I ran a marathon. I ran the LA Marathon. Can we talk? Go ahead, put him on real quick. We can do this. I want to know what it was like for you to talk to somebody who's at the top of her game, and that the two of you, I saw you, Hawk, coming out of your chair when she was telling the story about, like, yeah, you're at mile 20, and you realize, oh, I got, like, 10 kilometers still left, and I'm in second place. Like, dude, you were mesmerized by that conversation, right?
Yeah, I loved it, because her story is absolutely fantastic. And then to hear someone as accomplished as her go through some of the same things that anyone who's run a marathon has gone through, which is mile 20 is an absolute ass kicker and it's the worst. And it's the second half of the marathon where you're just like, I don't know if I have it in me. And for her to tell you that she was having this feeling of my legs are dead, I'm dead, holy crap, I'm in front of a three-time champion and I can do this, and then finishing it and then realizing that she was going to get to represent her country. It was amazing.
Adam, like I would say, what do you know, but you do know, and while she was in front of a three-time champion, you were probably in front of like an 85-year-old woman.
And that was
a
great feeling for me.
You had to feel that kind of pressure, right?
Yeah, when I looked back and I saw that 85-year-old and I was in front of her year two when I was behind her year one, it felt good, but really, when they allow amateurs and just people like me to do this, you get a feeling that you normally wouldn't get with other sports because you can't do them like other professionals do them. And I'm not a professional, but I've done what
yes.
Molly did.
Yes.
And I can relate to some of what she's saying. And to know the work that she put in and what she went through, to have that kind of accomplishment and that feeling of just so much happiness juxtaposed with so much pain is awesome.
The reason I'm laughing.
I'm going to guess. Flight deck?
Yeah, the reason I'm laughing is that the flight deck is still upset that he lost that bet very clearly. The flight deck is working today remotely. And he's blowing me up. Let me share with the entire audience the text, the message that I just got from James Kelly. Now remember, flight deck has got an axe to grind. On one of his weekly betting segments, he came in here and I said, after you tweeted at him that you were going to break the five-hour mark in the LA Marathon, he came in and said, Hawk is fat, he's slow, he's got no heart, I'm taking the over all day long, and you beat him. And he's bitter about that. His response was, stop, bird. Stop trying to relate to an Olympic athlete's struggle at mile 20.
I understand how it sounds. It's just there is a part of you that's like, wow, I know that feeling. Yes, it's a different feeling. The stakes are completely different. But hearing that story, it's the same as like when an amateur golfer is watching a professional golfer. You're like, hey, I've had that shot before. I've had 150 coming in on 18 and need to make a score. So, look, I'm not comparing myself to her. I'm just saying I took a lot out of that interview, and it was really nice to hear, and she's awesome.
That's exactly what you were doing. You were comparing yourself to her. You just said, I've never played a professional sport, but I can relate to something like this. So, like, it's none of my business, and I'm sure it's just between you and her, but what was that conversation like when you picked her up? What did you say to her?
I said,
Molly, I know exactly what you were going through at mile 20.
No, not like that, because I'm very humble in this. She's her and I'm me. I just said, hey, that was really cool to hear your story. I got a lot out of that because I just did the LA Marathon. And she
humble
said,
brag.
And she said, that's really cool. I'm glad that you guys were able
Why
to do that.
Why didn't you just stop it? I got a lot out of your story, Molly. Thank you for coming on. If you're so humble.
I didn't want her to think those were empty words. I wanted to convey why I got so much out of it. Because for all she knows, every call screener's told her, hey, thanks for your story. You know, I wanted to say, hey, why I could relate to that. And then we talked about
Did you notice an immediate connection between you and her once you dropped that on her? Or did she just still see you like any other call screener?
No, there was an immediate connection. She actually said, how'd you do? And I said, well, I did good. Thanks for asking.
So that makes her polite.
Right. And then we talked about how she's keeping busy in Boston.
That doesn't mean there's a connection between the two of you. It means she's polite. Like, if you say to somebody, hi, how are you? And they say, fine, how are you? You're not immediately connected for life or bonded. They're just being polite.
She kind of lit up, though, you know? Oh, how'd you do?
She lit up?
It's something us runners understand. Yeah.
Okay. Hawk, thank you very much.
Moral of the story is she's great. I'm just me, but she's great. And I got a lot out of the interview. That's it.
The moral of the story is she's amazing and you're still a dope. Go, man. Go. Stop taking credit for something that you didn't really do.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
Holy crap, Rit. It's Rit! Damn, Rit. That's
what
I'm
saying.
There are
no points for second place.
Hawk didn't even finish his first answer before James Kelly was in. Quote, stop, Bird. Stop. Stop trying to relate to an Olympic athlete's struggle at mile 20. You know what, though? I kind of see it working. Like, he has run the marathon. He finished the marathon twice. The only marathon, he went back to back and improved upon his time by nearly an hour and 20 minutes. Now Hawk's losing his head. Hawk literally just informed me, if we're counting, I've run more marathons than Molly.
Uh-oh.
I was going to try and defend you. What an unbelievable thing he just said. I am humble. I'm humble. By the way, I've run more marathons than she has. Don't you quit while you're so far behind. All right, we'll come right back. That's my crew, man. I retweeted somebody who said, hey, Rome, I really appreciate that you're not talking through some webcam to your crew. It's moments like this that make me want to talk through a webcam to my crew. What a wacky day, man. Old man Rit running the board. Hawk.
It's lit!
Hawk acting like he's an Olympian to another Olympian. I haven't even seen Alvin all day. James Kelly coming out of nowhere with a little drive-by on Hawk.
Justin dead.
Yeehaw!
Rit settling in. Phone lines are open. I've got, you know, like four or five major rants, which I did not get to. So I'll get to one or two of them when we come back, unless we've got good telephone calls, and I'll roll right through them. You're in the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Hello. Welcome back. Jim Home here. Inside joke. Here you go. That's how you do that. Rit, just run it back again. Man, Rit's always had this, like, unjustified arrogance to him. But today, he's just set. I kind of like it. Like, he's not afraid. He's just settling in. Making decisions on his own, hitting the right buttons. All right, last segment, 1-800-636-8686. Because we come back in the middle of a segment, I'm not really sure how to finish. Maybe a quick little whip around. COVID-19, the roundup. So one of the big questions coming out of the nationwide shelter-in-place order is, what's going to be higher? This isn't one of those either-or things, but what's going to be higher? Because of the pandemic, will it be the divorce rate or the birth rate? Pretty good question, right? Neither if you're happily married and you're smart about your family planning. But then again, this is America. And last year, some 45% of marriages ended in divorce. And that was without the forced confinement with your spouse and your kids and the extremely stressful circumstances that come along with a global pandemic. So the question about the divorce rate and the birth rate is tongue-in-cheek, of course, but it's actually a pretty good question. The idea that everybody is at home either nonstop wrestling or arguing to the point of a marriage breaking up. It's kind of extreme, especially when you consider a couple of things. Number one, the biggest cause of divorce in the United States is an extramarital affair. You'd have to be a total global scumbag to be running around on your spouse and the government by sneaking out for a side piece. So you're probably not doing that right now, right? At least not right now. John Jones getting a DUI during a stay-at-home lockdown would shake his head at somebody having an out-of-house affair during these troubled times. So the number one cause of divorce probably is not as big a factor right now. So that's good. Now, what about kids? What about this notion of unprotected wrestling? Maybe it's just me. But, I don't know, wouldn't you take every single precaution when it comes to having kids at this moment? A lot of people are unemployed and hospitals are at a hands-on deck with a virus outbreak. There aren't enough beds right now as is. Nobody knows for sure when this is going to end. So I've got to believe that most people are not trying for kids right about now. In fact, I'd argue most people are trying not to have kids, even Alvin. But then there's this. A report from Reuters. There is a global shortage of condoms right now. The world's biggest producer of rubbers is shut down. 20% of the normally available hats are not getting made. That's 100 million units out of production since the shutdown of the biggest raincoat factory on the globe. So maybe that birth rate spiking up is not that far-fetched. I know this. When you hear somebody say, stay safe, they mean more than just washing your hands for 20 seconds under warm water with soap. Speaking of wrestling, Fox announcer Joe Buck has been doing play-by-play of people's mundane lives on Twitter. It's kind of a fun way to pass the time. Only Joe Buck did tell KMOX yesterday, not everybody is sending him mundane activity.
I've had a couple of submissions from, let's say, a man and a woman that just didn't seem appropriate to put my voice to at this stage of my life, maybe later in life, but not now.
I never thought that I'd have to say this, but can you please stop sending Joe Buck your homemade amateur porn? We've got a good thing going with Joe Buck, lending his voice to marble races, car washes. We don't need him quitting because you turned his DMs into Pornhub. And finally, in this makeshift roundup of COVID-19 updates, nobody had a worse take on dealing with the outbreak than the head of driver development for Red Bull Formula One Racing. Dude's name is Helmut Marko, which is a pretty awesome handle, actually. Too bad Helmut Marko does not have awesome ideas as well, because he recently floated this harebrained scheme or thought of infecting the entire team with the virus so they could get over it and then get back to work without fear of future infection. He's of the opinion that once you get it, you can't get it again. Man, this is such a horrible take for so many different reasons. Where do I even start? And why do I even need to explain it? First of all, nobody knows if immunity is guaranteed with the virus after you get it. Like, nobody knows the effect it will have on certain people, regardless of age. But my man's out there treating it like it's the damn chicken pox. Oh, hell, you know what? Just give it to the entire team. Give us, why don't we rename our team COVID-19? Give it to us so we can get back to racing, damn it. Knob, not only is the plan extremely dangerous, it does not take into account that everybody else associated with Formula One would also have to agree to this idiotic plan. Or else not everybody would have the so-called immunity. Again, not guaranteed that he thinks he's going to get. After he went ahead and actually was spewing that garbage out loud, he told an Australian TV station, quote, "Let's just put it this way, it has not been well received," end quote. You think, Helmet? Don't you pull your head out of your ass, Helmet? And there's your little COVID-19 whip around. Condom shortages, Joe Buck getting sent homemade sex tapes that he doesn't want, and people wanting to have him do play-by-play. Helmet wanting to infect his entire team with the virus. Again, this is not a freaking joke. Yet, way too many people are still treating it like it is. It's not. You have your bleeping guidelines. Adhere. The more of you who do that, the sooner we can all get back to life as we know it. This too shall pass, but only if you people pull your heads out and start doing what you're supposed to do. Use your heads, stay safe, socially distance, make good decisions. And then perhaps we can flatten the curve sooner than later. Helmet, pull your head out. Helmet, you imagine this guy saying, "You know, hey, I got an idea. You know what we're going to do? We're going to infect the entire team. That way we get through it, and then we're clear of it, and we can go back to work without fear of getting it because we've already had it." Yeah, that's great, Helmet. But what if you can get it again? And what if you infect others, lots of others? And what if the people you infect then in turn infect others? Idiot. God, it's beyond me that at this point people are still running around saying things like this. Let's go to Lincoln, Nebraska. Hey, everybody deserves a chance to respond. Geoff. What's up, Geoff?
Why? How's it going, man?
Good. How about you?
Doing good. Hey, parody Larry calling me out and giving me advice on how to call is rich. So I got some advice for him. Use a parody from this.
Anytime, Rich.
No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
The beef that nobody asked for. Geoff and parody Larry. Not exactly Jeff and Matt, is it? Not exactly Lef and Brad. Not exactly Brad and Vic. Not exactly anything that matters. Geoff v. Parody Larry. Good day today. Don't forget, the Jim Rome podcast goes out every single Wednesday afternoon. Michael Bisping, UFC Hall of Famer, is going to be my guest tomorrow. Now we are done. I'll tell you what, given not that it's your concern, but given the way we kind of messed around and reordered the XR4TI, we're already short-staffed. I had guys move around, musical chairs. Given all that, I have to admit, it was even worse than I thought. You guys get your acts together, man. My thanks to Molly Seidel, U.S. Olympic marathoner, Michael Brockers, L.A. Rams defensive tackle. We had Dodgers manager Dave Roberts, the XR4TI, digging deep. Nice job, everybody. Thank you, Colognes. Hope you enjoy your Tuesday, and I will be right back here in our SoCal-based studios tomorrow. See you then. We're out.